This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When Adele Levine decided to go to physical therapy school, she thought that she was embarking on a solid career that would provide flexibility, a good income, and the ability to leave her work at work. When she accepted a position at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, she did so mostly out of convenience. Adele could not have imagined what she would witness as a physical therapist for some of the nation's most severely injured soldiers. But it wasn't all trauma and pain. Adele found compassion, camaraderie, and most importantly, humor in her work with amputee and brain-injured veterans. She recounts the trials and triumphs in a new book, Run, Don't Walk, The Curious and Chaotic Life of a Physical Therapist Inside Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Adele Levine joins us now. Welcome to the State of Things.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You did not set out to be a physical therapist originally. How did you finally make that decision?
I had a long string of dead-end jobs. I just wasn't going anywhere. I was always unemployed. And I was in a bookstore one night, and they had a display of U.S. News and World Report. And the title was, you know, the best careers for the next decade. And physical therapy just happened to be in the top 10, and it seemed a little more interesting than accounting or actuary science. And so I looked into it, and it seemed like it might be a good fit for me.
Can you imagine if pet grooming had been number one, what your book would be?
You know, that was a joke I had with a friend of mine who's a nurse. We always used to make up careers for each other. And so she said she was going to send me to pet grooming school.
There you go.
Now, so you see.
Well, but how did you ended up at Walter Reed then? So you did go to school. You became a physical therapist and ended up at Walter Reed. Tell us about how you got there.
Okay. I mean, I see I'm being painted as a very a lazy person, but I was signing the lease on a new apartment and just happened to be across the street from Walter Reed, and my landlord knew I was a PT, and she just assumed I was working over there, and so she was the one who pointed it out to me. And I wasn't working there, but I thought, wow, you know, that would be great, you know, because in D.C. you're always looking for a good commute.
Yeah, no, and in D.C., across the street is only 30 minutes. Everything else is right 90. So tell us about that, because your first day, I mean, so now, you know, yes, as you say, we're painting you as someone who's just kind of what's ever going to work best for me.
I mean, my parents would agree with you, but.
Well, it's a delightful book in so many ways because of the way you approach all of these questions and the ways things did come about. But I think your commitment to the job is not in question at all. Your first day really caught you off guard, didn't it?
It did. I mean, you know, I had worked as a physical therapist for 4 years already, and I felt very comfortable in kind of an orthopedic setting. And when you work in outpatient orthopedics, you know, you see everything. You see shoulder pain. You see people have had bad car accidents. So I had seen people who had been really badly injured before. But I remember the day that I saw, you know, my first patient who was combat injured. And I just remember having what I felt was a really weird reaction. When I saw him, I felt my heart speed up. You know, I felt like it was pounding, and I thought I was having trouble breathing. And I was so surprised by my reaction, because I always thought I was a little harder to shake up by that point. And I had seen bad injuries before, so I couldn't imagine why I was having this kind of reaction. And then I realized that it was really the first time I had seen someone who had been kind of maliciously and deliberately injured.
There's more about that experience at Walter Reed, where we're seeing quite a number of people who are in the same situation, a very different situation than working in other settings, in a clinical or outpatient setting, where in many ways the people you see are unique within their milieu. Here, it's a more common sight. How did that have an impact, or did it, on the way you interacted with patients and the way they saw each other?
Oh, what was unique about Walter Reed?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I worked in the outpatient clinic for 2.5 years, and then I was transferred into the amputee section. And what was really unique about the amputee section, not just by the volume of amputees we saw, I mean, we became the world's largest amputee clinic. But also what was especially unique was that we worked in a glassed-in rehab clinic, which was glassed in because they used to lead tour groups around the perimeter. And so, you know, there wasn't just one tour group going, but there were tour groups kind of all day long. So, you know, you're always looking up at people looking in at you. You know, my patients and my coworkers always used to joke that, you know, this is how it feels like to be an animal at the zoo.
Yeah, talk about the patients, because these are often, a lot of dignitaries. You've got members of Congress, celebrities. I mean, this is the Walter Reed at the time. It was called the Walter Reed Army Medical Center. You know, this was the place. So it was high profile folks who were looking at you in that fishbowl.
Yes, it was. And, you know, to be honest, you know, they didn't put us in this fishbowl to make a spectacle out of us, but they were really trying to find a way for visitors to come and see us without interfering with rehab. So that was the whole idea, but it did give us a fishbowl kind of effect.
How did the patients feel about it?
The patients were fantastic. They were so gracious. And, you know, these are young people who are in the military, so they're kind of used to not having a whole lot of privacy. So in a way, it flew. If you did this on the civilian side, this would never fly. But our patients were used to being exposed like that, and they handled it really well.
You also talk in the book about the fact that because these patients had similar experiences, similar backgrounds, and because, you know, it's a larger collection than, again, you might see in an outpatient setting where, you know, one individual comes in among able-bodied people. This is a very different setting. Did that affect their rehab and the way staff interacted with the patients?
Oh, definitely. I mean, first of all, at our peak, we're seeing between 100 and 150 combat amputees a day in that fishbowl. You could go to the biggest trauma hospital in the country and you might see one or two amputees. But, you know, at Walter Reed, you know, we were huge. And it was great for the patients because they didn't feel isolated. They didn't feel like they were the only person in the world to have this kind of terrible injury. And when we would bring them down to the clinic for the first day, you know, they could just sit on a mat and they could see how their rehab was going to progress just by looking all around the room. They could see other newly injured patients just like themselves. They could see new amputees learning how to walk for the first time in the parallel bars. And then they could see, you know, the more experienced patients, the ones getting ready to graduate, who are running around the track on prosthetic blades.
Yeah, and these patients were coming to you very soon after their injuries, right? Often within a few days. Am I right?
Yeah, it was incredible. At Walter Reed, our patients usually would arrive within 3 days of their injury in theater. So frequently they would wake up at Walter Reed. So it was kind of interesting if you were on Ward 57, where most of the combat injured patients were, you heard kind of a similar refrain when you walked up and down the hallway of nurses or PTs or OTs asking the patient, do you know where you are?
Yeah.
You know, you're at Walter Reed and you're okay.
Well, and the "and you're okay" part is what I want to talk to you about next, because it's one thing to be trained in physical therapy and work with people to get their mobility back, but there is an awful lot of psychological training that seems to be required for this. How much did you have and how much did you learn on the job?
I mean, I didn't get any as a physical therapist. We had to take, you know, you have to take a couple psychology courses to apply to PT school, but, you know, you're not trained in motivation, at least not when I went to school. And, you know, that was part of the appeal of physical therapy to me. You know, I can, I am not a great motivator, but, you know, the way I always handled it was I'm a very routinized person. And I felt like the one thing that I could give my patients was just the routine of me. You know, no matter what was going on with them, I would be there on time.
You also talk about the way humor played an important role in all of this. Talk more about that.
Oh, my God. There was such a dark sense of humor in our clinic. I mean, first of all, I feel like a lot of that was patient-led. I mean, most of our patients were in their very early 20s. Most of them were men. There were also women, but they behaved just like the guys. They used to tease each other all the time. They used to call each other terrible names like Ugly Stump or Princess if someone is having a lot of pain. And they would wear these T-shirts that said things like, I had a blast in Afghanistan, and Marine, 50% off.
Well, they're taking it. I mean, I'm going to pause before. I get the fact that they're wearing these T-shirts, and I suppose that was a big part of the therapy. But it does make you pause just for a moment before you allow yourself that chuckle, because you know it's their pain and not yours. But I guess you're entering into it. And as a therapist, again, you tell the story, get into it, bagosh and bagali. But ultimately, it's a real commitment. And you showed an ability to roll with it. I mean, this is a special kind of calling, it seems to me, if I may embarrass you for a moment.
Well, I like working with people. And I also think I have a lot of empathy, too. And I think you need to have that as a physical therapist. But most importantly, I also think you need to have a sense of humor, because that's a great way to connect with somebody.
Well, actually, Adele, we just now have a call from Fort Bragg, and someone called Sonny Mills is on the phone. And apparently you two know each other. Sonny Mills, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you. Hello, Adele.
Hey, Sonny. Good to hear you.
So you have a comment about she's on the line, she's listening, but we can mute her side of the phone if you want to tell us the truth. How was it for you, Sonny?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I happen to be blessed enough to have worked with Adele up at Walter Reed, and I just think, you know, your listeners need to not only understand that Adele is a fabulous therapist, a writer, and everything that she's put into that book is true to word. But I believe the nation deserves to know that Adele and the rest of that rehabilitation team up at Walter Reed, they really led the way in the rehabilitation of amputee patients and polytrauma patients. And that's a real gift that they gave to the nation. And I don't think that rehabilitation staff up there has received those kinds of accolades before. And they deserve every kudo that can be given to them. So thank you, Adele, and the nation should know what great contribution she has given to this country.
Thank you very much, Sonny Mills, a co-worker of my guest today, Adele Levine, who is a physical therapist who worked at Walter Reed. But you're not there anymore. Walter Reed has changed his name, but tell us about why you moved on.
I mean, I just felt like it was a good time to go. You know, I'd spent 9 years there, most of my career, and you know, we used to always kind of accuse our patients of becoming institutionalized, but I began to realize that really one of the people who was becoming institutionalized was me.
What do you mean by that? When you say what do you mean by that?
I mean, I was just really scared to leave. And, you know, things had slowed down so much. It had been over a year since we'd gotten a new combat amputee in. And we were spending a lot of time just sort of standing around, which was a new experience compared to how it was when it was so busy. And I felt like I was becoming burnt out. But at the same time, I was afraid to leave because I was going to miss the cafeteria Wednesday specials. And I liked my bike ride to work and all my coworkers. I mean,
actually, you write about an experience as a patient following a bone marrow donation. How did that change your perspective?
Well, I thought that the nurse who woke me up in the recovery room was just so nice. And he, like, applauded everything I did, you know? If I took a sip of water, I was incredible, you know? Just the fact that I had my eyes open was amazing. And, like, you know what? I ate it up. And so I realized, like, because we could be kind of tough on our guys, on our patients. But I realized, you know, it's nice to give compliments and applaud people for even what seems like a small thing. And I really tried to do that when I came back to work. And I think my patients thought I'd had like a mental break. But
you did seem a little shy about telling your story. Tell us the story about writing the book, because apparently you weren't telling anybody that you were doing this. So why did you write the book, and why keep it a secret?
Well, I wrote the book because I really wanted to remember, you know, the I really wanted to remember Walter Reed and what happened there and the people who made up Walter Reed, the coworkers, the patients, the families. And so it was kind of a personal project. And I'm superstitious. And I was worried, you know, if I start mouthing off about it, it's just never going to happen. You know, better to just work on it. And yeah, but a lot of it was superstition. If I say something, then it's not going to happen. So I really waited until just about the very last second. So when my friends found out that I'd written a book, there was a lot of, some of them kind of, I guess, were weirded out by it and by me.
Well, it's a wonderful book. And what are you doing now?
I work as a, I stay home part-time. I have two little boys. And I work part-time for two different hospitals as a PRN physical therapist, kind of on call.
Adele Levine, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Adele Levine's book is Run, Don't Walk, The Curious and Chaotic Life of a Physical Therapist Inside Walter Reed Army Medical Center. You can find out more about the book and the rest of our show at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, Charlie Shelton, and Andrew Tai. Robin Copley is the technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.